And we're talking today about the Adelante program for homeless youth here in Santa Fe. Isabel Ribe, Allegra Love, and Israel Aros join us. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So what is the Adelante program all about?
The Adelante program is a part of the Santa Fe Public Schools. So we serve children, youth, and their families who are experiencing homelessness. We have about 1,300 kids in the program right now.
So we have 1,300 homeless kids in Santa Fe, a small city. What's going on? Why is that?
Well, our families really have a huge variety of situations that they're living in. We are governed by a federal law called the McKinney-Vento Act, which defines homelessness a little bit more broadly than other definitions. So our families might be doubled and tripled up in housing. They might be an entire family sharing the living room of a trailer, room in a trailer. They might be living in substandard housing. They might not have utilities. A lot of them, the youth might be couch surfing. They don't have a secure place to go home at night. So they're not necessarily, like when we say that number 1,300, people think all these kids are on the street, and some of them are, but that's not the whole picture.
And what are some of the typical family situations that your kids have?
Well, like one example would be a mom who is supporting her family paycheck to paycheck, and then something happens. Like a mom recently had to go through surgery, and so she missed a lot of work, and she didn't have any kind of a safety net, so they lost their home because of that. And now the entire family is sleeping in one bed in another family's home.
Good heavens.
That's an example.
Right, right. So what kind of services do you provide for these kids?
It all depends on the family and what their specific needs are and what they're going through. So the three of us work in the schools one-on-one with the kids and really trying to see what they need on a daily basis. So we're trying to first cover their immediate needs, food, shelter, transportation, making sure they're safe. We do tutoring and school supplies and backpacks and winter coats and things like that that are sort of helping with the day-to-day needs, helping them get to school and be successful in school while their family is going through this kind of a crisis. We also do more intensive case management. We have a social worker on staff to look at the longer-term picture, helping the family get into housing and to become stabilized.
Now, Israel, you are the high school homeless liaison, and you're also an artist and a poet. How do you work with the young people?
My first contact with them at the high school level is either I'll find out through a counselor or through youth shelters that a student is going through some type of hardship. And so my first contact with them is trying to find out if they know where they can access clean water, get food, and find out if they know where different resources are, and actually find out their living situation, because like it does vary. Some are couch surfing, some maybe the parent was just got evicted and ended up at grandma's house. So the first thing that I do is just try to find out what their living situation is. And then from there, if I actually get a second or third time to be with them, then I'm assessing their school needs. But that's not even their first priority. It's just trying to find out, you know, how it is that they're living, you know. But it's also interesting because what you realize is that any of us could end up in that situation.
Yeah.
You know, that we do have teachers that are also part of the program that are in the Santa Fe Public School District.
What do you mean?
So if somebody ends up, you know, getting evicted and they just, you know, we're all one paycheck away from
So some homeless. Of the teachers are also homeless?
In this situation, which is talking about McKinney-Vento, yes, they qualify for our program. And we pretty much service anybody who ends up in that boat for the whole year. Because if they were in that boat and maybe they do find housing, we just want to kind of oversee, make sure that gets stabilized over the year. And for a lot of these youth, there's one shelter for all of northern New Mexico. So for a lot of these youth, it's like, I really don't have much options. All that I have for them, for the most part, is someone that they can listen to and confide in. And then, how you mentioned my poetry and my art, sometimes that means engaging with them after school, giving them space to express themselves, because that becomes the only vehicle that allows them to keep going back to school. And again, to school is the only space where they feel any kind of stability. So while somebody might view a student who's only showing up 2 times out of the week to their class, they have no idea how much effort that took for that student to show up those 2 days. So my job is to try to kind of give the teacher another perspective of that student.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, do you communicate with the teachers as to what each of these students' stories is?
Yeah, especially if it's the more complex, then the more involved I try to be with the teachers. We try to remain, confidentiality is key with the students. But if a student is like doing super poorly, I want him to have some kind of communication with the teacher. So unfortunately, the ones that are doing really good are the kids that I rarely see, because they're somehow creating survival skills to make it happen in that school. But that individual needs me as much as the other individual.
But why is that?
Because that child might not know what he or she has access to as far as schooling after, and really breaking a cycle, you know. So I try to get to them. They might have the same emotional needs as the other student. They're just been better equipped to navigate it for themselves, but they might be dealing with some crazy trauma that, you know, it's like a lot of the times, because I have 80 students, I kind of roll the dice and kind of go where my heart is going to take me that day to figure out who it is that I should see.
Right.
You know, and then usually, you know, it's pretty on the money. It's like, oh, this kid needed, you know, this kid just got kicked out of that last place he was at. He's out on the streets. Or, you know, such and such a student now is dropping, grades are dropping, you know, and just having that conversation makes all the difference in the world, because everybody's really overwhelmed in the school district, you know, and a lot of the school district actually starts when you see that barrier of what the McKinney-Ventos lies as far as at Capitol High. So many students are just right above that line.
Yeah.
And so you're having this conversation with the teachers, like, whatever I'm doing, it's like, implement that in the classroom, because this is going on across the board. The poverty level is so low. The need is so big. So a lot of times I do end up also servicing other students that aren't even in our program, because it's just like all around me. And I can't just be like, I'm going to help this student and not help these other 5 that are pretty much in the same boat. Just a little bit of guidelines around this McKinney-Ventos law is the only reason why they're not on the boat where I can help them.
Right, those sort of semi-arbitrary borderlines.
Yeah.
So some of your work, I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do, or some things you can do for the kids structurally in terms of helping them in material ways, but it seems like so much of the work that you do with them is just person-to-person, emotional, connecting work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you really look at where the students that I see are basically the students that the system is failing the most. And so it ends up being that these students are in the back of the classroom, or might even be in the front of the classroom, but nobody's really seeing the whole dynamic, the whole world that they're living. And the only space that I can really provide is that, to say, I recognize you, I see you. And then the other reality of where I've been in my life, having couch surfed and having bounced around, is like, I would have qualified for the McKinney-Vento. My family would have qualified. But at the same time, my mom, knowing my mom, she would have never gone out and gotten those services.
Why is that?
Just her own pride I remember times when I would ask her, why aren't we not on food stamps? As a kid, being aware of those services around, and we're going into a liquor store with like our last nickels and dimes. One time it was a silver coin, and we're exchanging it for some ham and cheese, and knowing that that exchange that just happened was really unfair. Like, we got shortchanged.
Yeah.
And me being 10 years old watching this and going, why aren't we getting these services? Why aren't we going after these services? And I'm sure for her it was, you know, fear of what might happen to her as an undocumented mother. And also, you know, just wanting to just get by. Just wanting to make it happen.
Now, did you grow up here in Santa Fe?
No, I grew up in East Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. How'd you make your way out here?
Poetry event, and just kind of seeing the sunset and said, this is where I'm going to retire. So I ended up a little bit here, a little bit earlier than planned.
So you presumably are connecting with a lot of children of immigrants whose story may be at least in some way similar to your own.
Yeah. But what I find here, and it's just been really interesting to be in this state, is, and Santa Fe in particular, is that where I come from, Spanish is spoken everywhere, you know, and the notion of who's an immigrant, who's so-called illegal, that question is just like, it's just a totally different conversation. And I feel like here, like, because of the different layers of history, we seem to negate the fact that we're coming all as immigrants to New Mexico, to Santa Fe. The only ones that can lay claim to this place is the natives here. But I hear a lot, it just seems a lot more toxic, some of the conversations people have sometimes around that, you know, and this lay claim to being Hispanic. And then I'm like, well, what does that mean to you? And there seems to be a negation of that Mexican side or that indigenous side.
Right.
And I know it's more complex, but whenever I try to bring this conversation up, it seems to just go into this divide. And I'm like, well, if you're Hispanic, then learn some Spanish, you know, and create this real tricultural space.
Yeah, and that's on top of the layer of history of people not being allowed to speak Spanish.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like coming back to the table and going, okay, let's reevaluate what happened historically, and let's talk about it. Let's mend that space.
Yeah.
And it seems like this dialogue that's not taking place.
Are there forums that of community dialogue like that? I know Somos un Pueblo Unido had this thing called Somos Primos.
Yeah.
We're cousins.
Yeah.
Which tried to kind of open that up.
I think that those spaces, like with Somos, they're so busy fighting on a legislative level. They're just like so busy. And these are dialogues that need to be happening on a daily, you know, around these issues.
In school,
out of school, making everybody feel safe, because our families don't feel safe. And Santa Fe wants to lay claim to being an immigrant sanctuary, but our families don't feel safe. And when you bring that up, it's like everybody nods their heads and says yes. And that there's that little extra effort. So what I wanted to start doing too is just having these dialogues and having just open mics on an artistic level. Like, it's kind of like when there's a couple that's going through something rough and they're not discussing it. And it just kind of keeps getting pushed
right
further down. And if we just have the dialogues, we'll realize, oh, we're really on the same page. We really want to do the same things. Oh, that Spanish speaker really wants to learn English. Oh, that English speaker really wants to learn Spanish. And just on that level, things change, you know.
We're talking to Israel Aros and Isabel Ribe and Allegra Love about the Adelante program for homeless youth here in the Santa Fe school system. Now, Allegra, you are working at the De Vargas Middle School, and you're also an immigration attorney. And I mean, I guess when Israel's talking about not feeling safe, you must see an awful lot of that among the students.
It's safety in a broad sense. What we're dealing with right now, the project we're working on at De Vargas, is food. We're building a food pantry there, And I think that it's important to understand when you're talking about feeling safe, food is a huge part of that. And not knowing where your next meal is going to come from, or not knowing when you're going to eat next, or maybe not knowing if you're going to have food a week from now, that is something that is on the mind of a lot of our students. And they get fed in school, and that's they get a most, if they're Title I, which the most students in Santa Fe are, they get breakfast and lunch in the school, and that's still not enough. So we're trying to work on a food pantry there. A lot of the kids, you know, it was just what Izzy was saying, they're truant, and if you look at their report cards and you look at their attendance records, it would be really easy to jump to a conclusion about that kid's character and what they want in their life and the kind of person they want to be, and it doesn't hold with the students who are in the financial situation ours are in. They're unsafe, and they're doing everything they can, and they're being as resilient as they can, and for some, it works out really well, and some, they're just not as resilient, and so they can't make it to school, and they can't get their homework done, and some of them might not have the strength of character to get it done, but most of them, they're just trying to survive. They're little kids, and they're going through something that I'm not sure as a fully grown woman I could deal with as gracefully as some of them are. And they're trying to do a lot. Getting through school is a big thing, especially if you don't have a role model in your life who's already done it. So
meaning parents?
Parents or another relative or someone, an adult who you really trust and who really knows about you, who can help you through the very, very basic steps of becoming an adult. One of the big problems we're running into, Izzy and I used to be a high school liaison with Iz last year, and one of the big problems we're running into is there's so much confusion about how to get into college. All of our students want to go to college. Not all, most. As much as any kid of any background. When it gets to filling out the FAFSA form, it's like running into a brick wall. And the counseling services at the high school are great, but they are so overloaded. And so we take for granted how much a kid who's never had any modeling of going to college can figure out on their own. And I think about my own experience of going to college and filling out the applications, how much my parents helped me. And if I didn't have that, it would have been impossible. And then forget about the fact that most of our students don't qualify for federal financial aid.
You're kidding.
Undocumented children of any status, they don't qualify for federal financial aid.
Okay.
That's Pell Grants, Stafford Loans, student, what is it called, work study? They don't qualify. So here's a kid who's busting their butt in school, and they don't have their papers, and they're being told, like, dream about your future. You can be anything. You need to be working for your future. It's this promise that's made between teachers and students. You work your butt off. You do everything you need to do, and you're going to go places. But undocumented kids, it's not. They can't work legally, and they can't get federal aid to go to college. I could have never gone to college or law school without federal aid. It never would have been. I would be in my town. I lived in Wyoming, a waitress still, if it hadn't been for federal aid. So how are we trying to get these kids to accept this bargain, work hard, come to school, show up, when the other side can't deliver? And when they figure it out, it's like maybe around freshman or sophomore year where these kids suddenly figure that out. And they just lose hope. And they start dropping out. They become despondent about school. They don't want to try. And I'm not sure I can blame them.
Now, are there any new laws that are helping?
So there's a new, for the listeners who don't know, there's a new program that President Obama's administration rolled out called Deferred Action. And that is for undocumented kids who have been in the country for, well, right now, since 2007, who arrived in the country before they were 16 and are studying or have graduated. They're able to apply for a temporary stay in the country 2 years. They're safe from deportation. They get a social security number and a work permit. And so what I've been doing, I've been helping Santa Fe Public School students go through that process. And it's great, and that really, really helps towards giving them, looking forward to a job, because that when they receive that approval, they can get a job like any citizen in the United States. But it doesn't do a lot to help with the college issue, and it also doesn't help their families. And I don't know a single person who's comfortable getting a reprieve from deportation for themselves, ability to work for themselves, who can't then look at their family and say, what about them? It's a good program, and it's a really good start to, it's a really humane and dignified start towards recognizing undocumented immigrants in this country, but it's the tip of the iceberg in terms of what our country needs to do.
Do you three end up becoming the kind of adult role models in these kids' lives that maybe they don't have at home?
I think sometimes, yeah. I think I work with a lot of girls, young girls, and I often think about what I was going through when I was in middle school. You know, it was a completely different context, but I was also having a hard time. And I think just showing up there as, you know, a mid-20s girl who's, like, self-assured and confident and went through school and everything.
And isn't that far from their age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that just my being who I am might reflect some of that for them. But, I mean, with a lot of my kids that I work with, it's just having a friend more than anything. Like, I pull them out of class and they're like, sweet, let's go for a walk, you know, let's go talk, let's go hang out. And they just like to know that I'm showing up for them, no matter what happens in that time we spend together or what else was going on in my work with them, just knowing that I'm going to show up and just hang out with them.
I think it's important to point out that a lot of our students have good role models at home. Their parents are fighters, and they want what's best for their kids, and they're really strong. And like Iz said, so many of us are one paycheck away from being in this exact situation. And I would hate to for anyone to come away from listening to this with the idea that the children in our program don't have good role models at home.
Absolutely.
It might take shifting your idea of what a good role model is and the kind of values that we want role model, but you know, it's like an undocumented parent, you know, maybe they can't have gone to college, maybe they're working 10 jobs so they're not home all the time, but they're still just fighting for their kids and they want what's very best for their kids, and they're in a terribly difficult situation. Mm-hmm. And I think that describes more of our parents in our program are like that than they are negligent or...
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. And she's totally right. Our kids see their parents and their grandparents working so hard and fighting for them.
Yeah. Some of the most courageous and resilient people around, because they did what it took to get here and survive and learn the system. We're talking about the Adelante program for homeless youth. You, Isabel, are working with the Women's Cooperative. Mm-hmm. What's that about?
So we started this about a year and a half ago. It's a group of mothers who were just having a really hard time providing for their families. And these women have such a creative spirit and such a natural entrepreneurial spirit that they had been frustrated not being able to express it. So we really just created a space for them to be able to have ideas and follow through with those ideas. And create things and hopefully out of that, you know, have a little income for their families. And we've been doing really well. It's been a really successful program.
What kind of things are they doing?
They make soap, which is awesome. They make soup and drink mixes. In the past couple months, they've started sewing, so they make aprons and hot pads and stuff like that. They also knit. And then some of them also make other things on their own, like jewelry. So when we go to a craft fair, we put out all of our stuff, and then if they have anything that they make on their own, they can put that out too. So it's really just creating opportunities, and they take it and they run with it, you know. They're constantly coming up with new ideas and things they want to do.
Where do they sell these things?
We go to craft fairs mostly. We're actually organizing our own craft fair, which is this coming Thursday the 19th at El Museo Cultural from 4 to 7.
Excellent. So pre-Christmas.
Pre-Christmas, yes.
And gentlemen.
A great place to come get all your Christmas shenanigans on. So we create those spaces. Sometimes I'll go to like a party or something and sell there. We have sold in some stores, and we also have an online store.
What's the website?
It's adelantesantafe.org.
Excellent. So people can go and check that out.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the big picture of the situation that we're in right now, where we're in just such a huge disparity between wealth and poverty and people who are secure and insecure in all the different ways that you guys are describing, how could it be different? I mean, I know that's not what you guys are working with day to day, but how would you change the system if you could?
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, I would like to see our community, oh God, this is a big ask, but our community reaching out a little more and acknowledging the people, the sort of people who don't have as much. There's always a chance. A lot of people say, you know, don't throw money at problems. Like, just giving a handout isn't going to solve the problem. It's not. I agree. However, for example, yesterday, I met a family who were living in a motel. Three children, all going to school. One mother with breast cancer, living in a motel. One motel room. And we just knew that they weren't going to be able to stay in that motel room through Christmas. The mother thinks that she can get work by the New Year, but two more weeks in a motel, I mean, it's so costly to stay in a motel, but they can't pay rent. And we had one of the women who works with Adelante, one of she helps out, donated a month's stay at the Motel 6 for this family. And that's really moving, and it's because that month is going to be so immensely helpful to that family and to that family's safety over the holiday when 20 degrees weather. And yes, it's throwing money at a problem. It is. But those kids could stay in a warm bed, albeit crowded together in a hotel room, but those kids could be in a warm bed over Christmas rather than being on the streets. And that mom is going to have time to get a job and save up money so that she can hopefully get them into secure housing. And that is, I mean, it is beyond helpful to them. It's a miracle for them. And that's just someone writing a check. And in this city where we have so many wealthy people, I just think we need more acknowledgement of the small things that people need that we can all contribute to.
I think one of the biggest things that I see as far as communication within the schools and motivating children is just so many layers of cultures but the reality of not creating dual language programs all the way to high school in the only state in the U.S. that's a bilingual, officially bilingual state on paper, on constitution, and you don't have dual language immersion programs all the way to high school. We're out resourcing to Spain to get teachers, Spanish teachers, and I'm like, this should not be happening. We should be getting these same high school students to graduate into a college, and 4 years later being back in that same classroom, being able to have those dialogues and being that mirror in the classroom for them to be like, hey, yeah, I did it.
Right.
You can too.
And teaching Spanish.
And teaching Spanish. And teaching colloquial New Mexican Spanish, not Spain Spanish.
Right.
You know, and so that these kids begin to identify at a whole other level and feel that they're in a space that is their own. You know, why isn't that? Why aren't we not trilingual, quadrilingual like other nations? Why are we the laziest nation with only being English only? That's, I think, major for me, and an abundance of after-school programs. You know, you want to talk about keeping kids in school, it's like keep them busy doing things, creative things after school. They funnel out arts and music programs when everybody knows those are the things that create teachers, lawyers, doctors,
right.
Social members. So it's creating volunteer after-school programs where you have people teaching music, teaching art, and in creative ways that don't require so many resources. Because that's always the conversation, is that there's a lack, a scarcity of resources, that there's a scarcity. But we live in an abundant nation.
We live in an abundant nation, but one small group of our citizens is keeping most of the abundance. That's the problem.
And I'm not negating none of that, but I think, you know, having grown up in East LA with very little, you always find these little resources. Like, as soon as our program expands a little, we end up manifesting so much more for so many more people. Our space grew a little, and the way we were able to help also grew. And so it's like creating these spaces after school where children are playing, you know, whether it be soccer, basketball, or you know, graffiti arts, hip hop arts, things that's calling to them, because Allen Ginsberg was the one that told us, you know, if you have, you want to teach a kid Shakespeare and Wordsworth, teach him Dylan. Well, we're in the era of Tupac and corridos and hip hop and salsa, you know, and bring that into the schools. Bring mariachi into the schools. See if you're not going to get this kid that wants to get a scholarship and go to college, if that's the one thing that's funneling them.
Bring dancing into the school, and you immediately bring joy.
Exactly.
Agreed.
Know.
Yeah.
But there's so many ways in which it's become so stifled with mandating testings and getting a second English class and getting a second math class. And it's like, that's all great and dandy, but if you're not creating those other outlets, that's going to fall on top of you, you know. Because as it is, state standards are, well, you talk about a kid graduating with a SBA or whatever, nobody mentions, like to say that they need to pass that to graduate high school, but nobody mentions that that test is at a 7th, 8th grade level. Nobody mentions that fact. We just say, like, this is the marker to graduate high school. But nobody mentions, like, well, what is that marker, really? You know, when we have, like, all these kids that graduate high school and the valedictorians of our high schools are having to take remedial classes at the college level because we're not raising that bar, you know, and we need to raise it on all levels, creative, technologically, you know, and there's an abundance in that. Even in the schools, you know, it's like giving those freedoms to those teachers. Like a teacher now in some schools has to go and say 2 weeks before to pop in a YouTube video. I need to have the freedom in my classroom. If somebody talks about butterflies, that I can pop up a video, boom, and create that curiosity and that engagement.
They're not allowed to show a video.
They
of
have
a
to
butterfly?
Get per- they're t- if it's YouTube, they have to get permission.
Wow.
You know, it's not so extreme, but it's a reality of, like, I need to have some type of, like, really, like, creative free will in my classroom to ignite what's going on in my classroom right now.
Yeah.
Now go ask you, you know, 2 weeks later, you know, to show a video about MLK that already blew away from their heads.
Right.
And our classrooms aren't really recognizing that these kids are way faster than us. Way faster. So we need all those resources. I'm 36 years old and I'm like, I'm too slow, because these kids are just on a whole other level. So I need those tools, and there's a bunch of tools out there that are not being able to be used, you know.
We're talking about the Adelante program for homeless youth, and Isabel, you mentioned that there's an event this coming Thursday at El Museo Cultural. What time is it again?
Yeah, from 4 to 7.
From 4 to 7. Now, if people want to get involved with the program, donate in one way or another, can they do so?
Absolutely, yeah. A great way to learn more is to go to our website, which is www.adelantesantafe.org. There you can see our current events, you can see more information about our program, you can get in touch with us, you can also donate. You can see our store, and we have our volunteer information on there, so adelantesantafe.org.
And can people also donate clothes and food and things like that?
Yeah, we don't actually accept clothing per se, because we don't have room to store it, but what we do need is winter coats and warm winter boots and gloves and hats and those kinds of things. And food, we can always take non-perishable food for our food pantry, school supplies, books, stuff like that, and warm things, furniture.
Yeah, and if you have a question about donation, just give us a call and we can tell you if we need it or if we can't take it, where you can best get that donation to.
Mm-hmm. And what's the number?
My number is 467-2559. That would be a good way to call.
467-2559. Isabel Ribe, Allegra Love, and Israel Aros are with the Adelante program for homeless youth. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.